It's a good opportunity to start learning again tonight on Tu B'Shvat. It's a good time for new beginnings, Rosh Hashanah Li'ilanos, and it's not God's sense of humor that makes it the coldest day of winter so far this year. It's just a gentle reminder that we're not supposed to be in New Jersey. You know, we're supposed to be celebrating Tu B'Shvat in another land where today my son told me it was 65 and gorgeous. What do you hear from Yad Binyamin? How was it today?
I don't know. They're not the other grandparents are there.
Are there? So okay, you don't hear. Okay, but you know, I think it's just Hashem's way of reminding us that Chevra, you know, you're not supposed to be here. Pick it up, pick it up. We know that Tu B'Shvat means a lot of different things, but one of the ideas we'll talk about tonight, I think, will have a lot to do with Tu B'Shvat. Actually, let's start with that idea first. It's Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Tezayin, the learning we do tonight, Rabbi Le'ili Neshama, of Shifra Rivka Bas, Rav Elchanan Yitzchak, as we said. This is Shifra Epstein, really an amazing representation of what it means in this week's parsha of being a Mamlechas Kohen and the Goy Kadosh, being of great nobility and part of the Jewish people. So learning we do, Shabbi Le'ili Neshmasa, and it's in Yud Tes Tezayin, page 404 in the Art Scroll, Vahi Bayom Hashlishin. It was in the third day, the third of Sivan. Bios Habok. Excuse me. The third day after they prepared, meaning Shlosh Tzimei Agbala. This is the beginning of Matan Torah. In the morning, Vahi Kolos of Rakim, Vaanan Kaved Alahar, Vekol Shofar Chazak Maod, Vehacharad Kolam Asher B'Machane. That there were sounds. Amazing sounds. This light and sound show that was going on, and it was something that caused great charada, trembling amongst the people. This loud sound, the kol shofar, chazak ma'od, and we know that the Medrash points this out. The Medrash points this out that there were many, many sounds related to Kabbalah Satorah. The Gemara in Brachos talks about chamisha kolos. There were five sounds that the Torah was given with, and Rav Schwab points out that what's interesting is that there's a sifrei in Parshas Naso that seems to point to a stira, seems to point to a contradiction. That here, when God comes, God presence comes, it's with this awesome, awesome sound. It's with these earth-shaking experiences. But yet, now let's turn to a haftorah, a famous, famous haftorah that is not always read. It's a haftorah, one of the haftorahs that actually is often skipped. It's the Haftorah of Parshas Pinchas. The reason why it's normally skipped is because Parshas Pinchas is normally the first of the 3 weeks, and then you would read the Haftorah for Matos for Pinchas. But when Pinchas is not part of the 3 weeks, page 1190, we read the story from Melachim Aleph that starts Perek Yud Ches but continues through Perek Yud Tes. And what happens is, if you remember, this is the aftermath of the famous story of Eliyahu Bahara Carmel, that Eliyahu, Elijah the prophet, has a showdown with the false prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel up in Haifa. And he shows the Jewish people that Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem is the true God. These prophets of Baal are false prophets. He actually kills the false prophets of Baal. And when the wicked Izebel hears about this, she basically sends a message to Eliyahu, you're going to join them, meaning I'm going to kill you. So he runs away. He runs to the south of Israel, and then he runs even further. And what's interesting is, where does he run to for this amazing, amazing revelation from God? It's page 1191, Vayakam vayochal v'yishta v'yelech b'kawach ha'achila hi arboim yom v'arboim loyla ad har ha'elohim choriv. That he travels from the south of Israel till where? Till Mount Sinai, till Har Sinai. Exactly, Alon. He's at Har Sinai. And he comes into a cave, and he rests there. V'hinei dvar Hashem elo, v'yomer mal l'chafo, Eliyahu. What are you doing here? And Eliyahu says, what do you mean? I came because I avenged the honor of God, because the Jewish people abandoned your covenant. V'yomer, pasuk yud alef, tsei, v'mata bar l'fnei Adonai. V'hinei Adonai over. Right? So God tells him, go outside, Eliyahu, and I'm going to pass by you. The ruach gedola v'chazak, There's a great, powerful wind. Mefari Karim smashes mountains, breaks apart mountains of Meshaber Slum, smashes rocks, Lefnei Adonai, in front of God, but Lo Veruach Adonai. But God's presence isn't in the wind. V'achar haruach, rash. And after the wind, the tempest, there was an earthquake, a mighty rumbling, and Lo Verash Adonai. But Hashem's presence is not in the earthquake. V'achar harash, esh. And after the trembling, the earthquake, there's a fire, but Lo Ve'esh Adonai. God's presence is not in the fire. V'achar ha'esh, kol d'mama daka. And after the fire, there is a silent, still sound. Vayhi kishma Eliyahu, vayelat panav badarto, vayetze v'yamod pesach ha'mor, v'inei elav kol v'yomer malach hafo Eliyahu. And when Eliyahu hears the kol d'mama daka, when he hears the small, silent sound, he realizes this is God's presence. So the Medrash says, I don't get it. Both experiences on Har Sinai, the experience in our Parsha in Har Sinai is with what? Kolo Suvrakim, Kol Shofar Chazak Ma'od, this massive, massive sound. We say that's how God comes to Har Sinai. But yet we see later on in Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Tes, Eliyahu HaNavi is in the same place where Moshe is, and God's presence is not in the loud voice. God's presence is not in the rumbling. God's presence is not in the fire. It's like the antithesis of Har Sinai. God's presence comes with the kol d'mama daka. So what's going on? So Rav Schwab tells us that there's really no contradiction. He says if you look carefully at the psukim that we're dealing with, what are the psukim talking about? He said there were two stages to what we referred to as Kabbalah Satora, as the Sinai experience. He's Rav Schwab says there was Matan Torah, and then there were the Aseres HaDibros. What was Matan Torah? Rav Schwab says, Matan Torah, what is the Lashon of Matan? Of a Matana, of giving. The first stage was God gave us Torah. What does that mean, He gave us Torah? It doesn't mean that He gave us the laws. That's not what He suggests. But he says that Matan Torah was when the Jewish people had put into, he says, Pinimius HaNeshama, the Kedushas Nishmas Yisrael. The Matan Torah, this first stage, was when God put into the inner space of the soul of a Jew, a Devekus HaPinimius Shalev Kol Echon Mi'Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'nikpa B'Lev HaRotzim L'Kayim Dvar Hashem. That what happened at Matan Torah, the first stage of the Sinai experience, Matan Torah, was when God put into the heart, into the inner space of the soul of every Jew, a deep, deep, deep attachment to God. This yearning to do the will of the Almighty. And he says that this is seen in the famous, famous Rambam, where the Rambam says that a man who doesn't want to give his wife a get, whose Yetzer Hara grabs him, he says basically he could beat the stuffing out of the guy until he says he wants to give the get. And why is that? Because we know that really, in the deepest place, every person wants to be a part of the Jewish people and he wants to do the mitzvos of Hashem and to distance himself from Averos. It's just that we have Yetzer Hara, we have a lot of garbage that we put on top of ourselves. But he says, Rav Schwab says that this is also the famous Gemara Nida, that every Jew, what do they do when they're in utero? What does every Jew have the experience of in utero? You learn the entire Torah with a malach. What does that mean? What does that mean you're learning the entire Torah with a malach? It means that even before you've taken a breath of this world, before you've been exposed to any stimuli, literally in the mother's womb, every Jew learns Kalat Torah Kula. Learns the entirety of the Torah. When the person comes out into the world, there's a lot that gets piled on. But at the core of every Jewish neshama is this deep yearning for Dveikus Bashem, is this deep, deep attachment, the Pinimius HaNeshama, in the innermost recesses of their soul, they really see who they are. And he says that was Matan Torah, before God spoke to them. When there was this matana, when this was given to the Jewish people, there had to be these loud sounds. And there had to be these powerful experiences. Why? He says it's actually like God had to knock a stake into the into the inner, deepest places of their being. Meaning the kolos of Rakim are what drove it in deep. And it was through these kole kolos and all of these different experiences, these stimuli, that were able to pierce into the depths of the Jew. But when God actually spoke to us, there's another medrash that says, a bird didn't chirp, a wave didn't lap in the ocean, the whole world was still when God actually spoke to the whole people. And that's like the kol demamah daka that Eliyahu experiences. Why? Why when God actually speaks, is there nothing else? Because that's what it's supposed to be like. When Hashem speaks, there's nothing else. You understand that Hashem's word is all of reality. Like the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Ba'asar ma'amaros nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 sayings. And this is, of course, one of the deep teachings of Tu B'Shvat, something that we mentioned at Shal Shudas just yesterday. That in Tu B'Shvat, what is the significance of Tu B'Shvat? Agriculturally, botanistically, what's going on in Tu B'Shvat? What do our sages teach us? That you go outside, do you see any trees that look like they're ready to bring forth their fruit? What does this mean? This is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. This is the new year for the trees. What does it mean? You know what they say? You can't see anything but the saraf ola be'ilan. The sap is going up in the tree. It's rising in the trunk of the tree. That's what's happening outside. And that's what many say the meaning of Tu B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah, is that you see so many Jews that you look at them. Who are they? What are they? These people, they're so far, what do they know? But as we know, many tzaddikim teach us that every Jew, Rav Soloveitchik famously once said, the Jew that's the furthest away from Talmud, the Jew is the biggest son. They have the same neshama. They have the same Kedushas Yisrael. What does that mean? That's exactly where Rav Schwab is talking about. This Matan Torah, this that was put into the Pnimius HaNeshama, the Dveikus Balev, the attachment in the deepest recesses of a soul in the heart, that every Jew has. Right? And that was the first stage. And that's what Tu B'Shvat really is teaching us. And that's what every person had. That was the first stage. Once you had that, then God said, now let me talk to you. Once you had that connection, meaning the connection preceded God's actual Dibur. And that's certainly something that, as we said, we see in the Rambam, we see in that Gemara Nida, how every fetus is taught Kala Torah Kulo, because that's what Rav Soloveitchik says it means. It means that every person has the whole Torah in potential. It might not be conscious, but every Jew has Kala Torah Kulo. That's why when you start learning, you feel a natural connection to Torah. It's not simple. We spoke about that also with Shal Shudas. Rav Volbi says in the beginning of Ali Shor, that learning Torah is a very different experience than almost anything else you have in this world, right? Even than other chachmas, because it's not just you know, a class that you sit in. It's something that has to pierce to Pnimius HaLev. It's something that has to get to the dveikus point of the neshama, and it has to move to that point. Sometimes it takes a while to carve its way through, depending how many layers people put on top of it, right? To really appreciate Torah, it takes serious effort, and it takes real work. And that's what Rav Schwab is saying, the difference between the kolos of Rakim on the one hand and the kol demamah medak on the other hand. Meaning you have to know the fiery passion that every Jew has deep in the soul, but then when you're actually coming to Dvar Hashem, everything else has to be what? Everything else has to be muted. You're solely focused on the Dvar Hashem. That's why they say the famous drasha from the beginning of Parshas Chukas, Zos Chukas HaTorah Adam Ki Yamos Ba'ohel. This is the statute of the person, a person who dies in a tent, and it's talking about the Parah Aduma, but what's the famous Drashas Chazal, the famous rabbinic interpretation? Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the way Chukah, a chok is something that's carved in. This is the way you carve Torah into you, Adam Ki Yamos Ba'ohel. That when you're learning Torah, what's the rest of the world like to you? Not there. Meaning you have to be solely focused on Limud HaTorah. And that's something that in the great school of the Baali Musar, the great ethicists, they said that when a person learns Torah, it has to be with a certain passion and it has to be with a certain fire to try and reach that deep place, to be able to get past all the levels. And this actually relates to the very next idea I wanted to talk about. It's literally the next pasuk, right? It's Perek Yates Pasuk Yitzayin. So that's one idea. Again, the different sounds versus the silence that you have to have. And that is the difference, the two stages. So that was Rav Schwab is being mechadish. The two stages of Matan Torah. One is Matan Torah, the Matana of Torah, which is the deep natural yearning that each of us has for it. And the second is that when we actually do have that encounter with the Almighty, there's nothing else, right? We're supposed to be focused on the Almighty. Again, today's day and age, that's not an easy thing to do, to shut out everything. You have to, how many things do you have to shut off and silence? And that's why Shabbos is such a gift, right? It's Friday night on Shabbos, you know, it's quiet. Maybe the phone's ringing if you have your ringer on, spam, but even spam ends by, I don't know, 8:30, whatever it is. You can have a little silence. You can have a little silence. And in the next pasuk it says, "Vayotze Moshe es ha'am lekras elim min ha'machane vayisyatzu besachtes har." By the way, just one interesting idea. What does it mean, "Vayotze Moshe es ha'am lekras elokim," that Moshe had to bring out the people to greet God? What does that mean? The Medrash says Moshe went to go get the Jewish people, saying, "Your chassan is waiting. What are you doing? Your chassan is waiting for you. Quick, Jewish people, Knesset Yisrael Kala. You have to come out." Because where were the Jewish people at the time? Was the famous Medrash? Where were they? They were sleeping. The Jewish people slept late. What does that mean? The Jewish people slept late? Like, really? Come on. Really, for Kabbalah Satorah, they slept late. So Rav Schwab says very beautifully, this is an idea I've seen in other places, but he writes it up so nicely, that what did the Jewish people expect was going to happen? They were going to expect that they were all going to experience a mass prophecy, right? How do you have to achieve prophecy? Every prophet except for Moshe was sleeping when they got prophecy. Moshe was the only one that was awake, able to talk to God face to face. So what did everyone do? Everyone ate and drank, because to achieve prophecy, you have to be at a certain level of simcha. There were certain prophets who used to have musicians play music for them to get them into the proper frame of mind. So they enjoyed, they have a wonderful, nice sudas yantif. And then they went to sleep expecting prophecy. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, "No, get up. You're not experiencing a prophecy. You know what you're experiencing? You're experiencing something greater than prophecy." The Gemara in Baba Basra says, "Chacham adif minavi," that a Talmud Chacham is greater than a prophet. And that's why there's so many references that the Jewish people were standing up, vayamod, that they stood up to receive the Torah, that they were awake. That was the godless of Matan Torah. This wasn't a mass prophecy. This was a literal revelation. As Shlomo HaMelech referred to, Yishakeni Minashikis Pihu, in Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, give me the kisses of the lips, that Chazal said that was a reference to Kabbalah Satorah. Meaning Moshe was the only other Navi, Pel Peh Adabrabo. God says, I talk to Moshe mouth to mouth. Don't compare any other prophet to Moshe. But here, this was beyond prophecy. This was beyond prophecy. This was Kabbalah Satorah. This was something even greater than that, and something that was qualitatively different than that. Because when Kabbalah Satorah, what does it mean? When a person's Nevuah, you set yourself in a proper frame of mind in Nevuah, and then what happens? How do you experience Nevuah? You're totally passive. God comes and puts this... But to be able to accept Torah, receive Torah, the Jewish people had to be what? What? They had to be part of experience. They had to be active. They weren't passive. They had to be mekabel the Torah. They had to receive it. They had to say the Nasa v'nishma. This is where we became partners with the Ribono Shel Olam. This wasn't just a passive experience, sleeping down, take it lying down. And that's why, of course, the famous minhag has developed of tikkun leil shavuos. And that's why it's called a tikkun. What does tikkun mean? Tikkun means to fix. We're fixing the mistake. They thought to receive the Torah, just go to sleep and God will come and put it all in your head. No! To receive the Torah, what does it mean to receive the Torah? It means to be awake. It means to work for it, to be able to receive it. It's the one of the a story that only misnagdim can appreciate, not chassidim. We know there were many great tzaddikim that had magidim. Magid was that a malach came and taught them Torah. Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, in the 1500s, had a malach come and teach him Torah. And he actually wrote a sefer of the lessons that the malach taught him. The story is told that the Vilna Gaon had a malach approach him in a dream and said, I want to reveal to you the secrets of the Torah. And then the Vilna Gaon told him, he said, no, thank you. You have to work to get Torah. I'm going to work to get my Torah. That's a very misnagdish maisa, not chassidic maisa. You know, that you have to work at it. Torah is not supposed to be meant easy. You worked it. Look, you came out tonight in freezing weather to come to Torah. Do you realize how chashiv? I'm not saying this to make you feel good and to make the people listening to this on a recording feel bad. But do you realize how chashiv it is? I'm not joking. To come out to learn Torah? This is part of the Asik Batara. This is part of the efforts that you put out to learn Torah, and that's tremendous. And we don't just lie down and go to sleep when we learn Torah. We have to be active. We have to be part of the experience. We don't go to sleep. This isn't a prophecy. But and so that's the idea that Vayotze Moshe had to go and bring the people out to greet God from the camp because they were shluffing. They were in the camp, they were still sleeping. But what's the end of the pasuk? This is the famous Drasha Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Shabbos Peches Amid Aleph, Vayisyatu Besachtis Hahar. And they stood Besachtis Hahar. What does Besachtis Hahar mean? Literally means inside the bottom of the mountain. Because the Marsha said in the commentary in the Gemara, it should just say Vayisyatu Tachas Har, by the bottom of the mountain. What does it mean Besachtis? Besachtis implies that they were inside the bottom of the mountain. And what does that mean? They were inside the bottom of the mountain. So Rashi quotes, if you see right there, we're in 404, the column on the left, Rashi column on the left, third line down, that was second line, Besachti Sahar, Rashi says, Lefi Pshuto, Biragle Har. According to Pasha Pshat, it's that they were at the foot of the mountain. But Umedrasho, the Medrash is the rabbinic interpretation, Shenitla Shahar Mimakomo, God lifted up the mountain from its place, Har Sinai, v'nichpa aleim kegigis, and he turned it on top of them like a gigis. You know what a gigis was? Like a vat of beer, a vat of alcoholic beverage, right? That God inverted and like put it on top of them. And God basically threatened the Jewish people, said, accept the Torah, good. If not, shom tekvurascham. You're going to be buried there, meaning I'll just leave the mountain, and that's it. So that Gemara is so troubling on so many levels. And what's interesting is the Gemara then says, Rava says, great! Muda Rabbaloi Raisa! Now the Jews really could get out of anything. God, coercion, onus Rachmana Patri, this halachic concept that when it's circumstances beyond your control, you're putter. You're not chayiv, you're not considered guilty. And so the Gemara then continues, no, but they did accept it fully somewhere else. When did they accept it? Purim kimu v'kiblu hayehudim kimu masha kiblu kfar, that the Jewish people fully accepted the Torah in the time of Purim. And Rashi there says, what does that mean? Bimei Achashverosh, in the days of Achashverosh, me avas haneis shenas elohem, because of the love of the miracle that happened to them. So again, this Gemara is so troubling on so many levels. But let's just go through the simple levels that it's troubling on. First of all, if Rava was correct, that the Jewish people really had such a great out, right? Oh God, we were coerced. Why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Why were they sent into Galus? Why didn't the Jewish people say, God, we were coerced, how, right? Shouldn't they have had that excuse? Secondly, what does that mean? That because of the miracle, the Avas Hanes in the time of Achashverosh, the love of the miracle in the time of Achashverosh, they accepted it then. And the third question that Tosus asks right there in that Gemara, Peches Amid Aleph, didn't the Jews say Nasa V'Nishma? The Jews said Nasa V'Nishma. So why all of a sudden does God have to hold this vat of beer again? What's the vat of beer about? Like, okay, Jews say held the mountain, held something on top. Why kegigis? Kegigis, that's what Rashi says. It's something that would hold like beer in it, right? So what's going on? What's going on here? So there are a number of interpretations. I'd first like to present Rav Schwab's take, and then we'll answer maybe from a different perspective, Tosfos, and something actually from Shmuel Birnbaum Zatzal, who the great Rosh Hashiva of the Mir, who was Goldie Sarotskin, he used to live here, her father. Her father was Rosh Hashiva of the Mir, and he has a beautiful interpretation. But first, let's work with Rav Schwab. He said, what does it mean that the Jewish people were coerced? What does it mean that they were coerced? So Rav Schwab says that really, what does it mean? It doesn't mean that the Jewish people didn't want to accept the Torah. Of course they wanted to accept the Torah. They said, Nasav and Ishmael, Tosfos' question. Of course they wanted a Torah. But what does it mean? Hakavana hi, sheyichom lomer lo kibalnu ela ba'olam kezeh. Yeah, God, we said Nasav and Ishmael, we want to accept the Torah, but only in a world like this. What does that mean? Only in the world where your presence is so palpable, it's berura me'od. It's so clear to us. Right? That you are leading us with revealed miracles, with your presence openly devolving upon us. And that's what it means. Kefias har kegigis. Right? That you held the mountain over us. And that's what Rav Schwab says. Maybe this is why Rashi says, why the Gemara uses kegigis like a vat of alcohol, meaning they were like intoxicated on God. They were high on God. I mean, that sounds a little crazy, right? But, you know, some people have a Tu B'Shvat Seder where they drink strong beverages, right? So this is our Torah will be in place of the Tu B'Shvat Seder, right? That they were high on God. They were like intoxicated with God. Meaning when you're drunk, everything's good, right? Everything feels good. Meaning, God, you're giving us mun. We have water coming out of a rock. There's this cloud of glory. There's this fire at night. This is awesome. This is awesome. Of course, Nasav and Ishma. This is a life that we want. And that's why when they had a Beis HaMikdash, and they had clear miracles, the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, every walk to the Beis HaMikdash, you saw clear miracles. So in a world like that, they couldn't claim that you have that world. And you couldn't keep God's Torah in that world, so you're going to get punished. They couldn't claim coercion. What do you mean? They still weren't. They still had these clear Nisim Galuyim revealed miracles. God was so obvious. They could have claimed coercion in a world of Hester Panim, in a world where God's presence was totally hidden. And when did they experience such a world? Exactly. It was the first, mamish, the first time since Yetzias Mitzrayim that the Jews experienced a world that God's presence was hidden was when they went into exile in Babylonia and Persia. That was the first time. In hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, that the Jewish people experienced Hester Panim, that the Jewish people experienced a hiddenness of God. And that's what Rashi is saying. That's what the Pshat in the Gemara is, that the Kabbalah HaTorah that really obligates us today was the Kabbalah HaTorah in the time of Purim. Why? Because of that miracle, the love of the miracle that happened in the days of Achashverosh, because in the days of Achashverosh, it was kulo behester. It was entirely hidden. Right? You look at Megillas Esther, not once is God's name in Megillas Esther. Right? The Shem Hashem does not appear once in Megillas Esther. Again, Hamelech is the most prominent word in Megillas Esther. As I've shared many times, the what's it called, the wordle that Rav Aaron Srolovitz made, and if you want, I'll show it to you after, where he put the entire text of the Megillah into this program that makes a graphic based upon the words, and the words that's the most prominent, that's the key to the whole text, comes in bold in the biggest color, and he did it with the Megillah. And Hamelech is the word that is by far the largest in the Megillah, meaning God. And Hamelech, the Gemara Megillah tells us, is a reference to Hashem, not to Achashverosh. But in nature, God wasn't there. God didn't appear anywhere in the story. And that's why that even though they were Be'eretz Oyveihem, they were in the land of their enemies, lo mas by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem didn't despise them. And even it's when it seemed that God's face was turned away from them, od yada netuya. His arm, his hand was still stuck out to us to save us and to help us, even though he was turned away, even though there was a hester upon him. And that's when, kvar hayu nechonim l'kabel ha-satorah, l'kayim osam be'ava b'chol ha-matzavim. And that's why Rav Schwab explains what the Gemara in Shabbos is telling us, Peiches, that's when the real Kabbalah Satorah happened. The Kabbalah Satorah that obligates a Jew under all circumstances. When the Jewish people faced the greatest existential threat that we ever had in our entire history. It was then. Why? Because every Jew in the world lived in Ahasuerus's domain. And what was the decree? Extermination. Do you understand the Purim story? It was the greatest existential threat that the Jewish people ever faced. Greater than the Holocaust, greater than the Spanish Inquisition, greater than Churban Bais Rishon, because it was still a Jewish community in Babel. People don't realize, before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a thriving Jewish community in Babel. There were multiple stages of exile. Golas, Yechaniah, Golas. There were a number of Goluses before the actual destruction. You had a thriving Jewish community in Babel. They weren't going to be destroyed. The Jews in Jerusalem were, and Israel were. But in the time of Purim, the greatest existential threat, when we felt totally abandoned, and yet, when we felt abandoned, when Hashem's face wasn't looking, but yet, Zroa Netuya Yado Od Netuya Lanu, that his hand was still stuck out to save us, that's when the Jewish people felt, oh. And that's when we weren't intoxicated on godliness. And that's why Kabbalah Satorah that we read of in this week's Parsha, that was for a matzah of a gili upon him, of the revelation of God's face. The Kabbalah Satorah in Megillas Esther was the Kabbalah Satorah of Hester upon him. It was the Kabbalah Satorah of hidden, of the Kabbalah Satorah of exile. And that's why, if you look in the Gemara, it says that the Torah, the Kabbalah Satorah, the accepting of the Torah that obligates us, is the Kabbalah Satorah of Purim, not the Kabbalah Satorah of Shavuos, which is fascinating. You know, so Purim has a great, great meaning for us, not only in terms of saving us, but it has great spiritual meaning. It was a new Kabbalah Satorah. It was a Kabbalah Satorah that obligated us. And this is Rav Schwab's approach, that yes, they said Nasa V'Nishma, but the Nasa V'Nishma was this heady, intoxicated, high on God experience that of course couldn't last. Of course couldn't last. Tosfos has a different approach, and it's very interesting what Rav Birnbaum says. And this relates the first idea we said to this third idea that we said. Skipping the middle idea, right, about Chacham Adif Minafi, that the Jewish people mistakenly went to sleep because they thought it was going to be prophecy, and no, Torah is greater than prophecy. We're active participants in the Torah experience, in that meeting of minds, if you will, with God. But what happened was, Rav Birnbaum points out that Tosos, there, in Gemara Shabbos, Peches Amar Aleph, 88a, tells us that you know why Hashem had to hold the mountain over their heads like the vat of beer? Because even though they said Nasa V'Nishma, they were very excited, but then they became very scared, the Pasuk tells us. When did they become scared? When there were all these loud noises. And if you see in the other account of Kabbalah Satorah in Ve'eschanan, it's mentioned here just in a cursory glance, but if you see Ve'eschanan six times in the narrative of Kabbalah, it talks about a fire. That there's a fire, that the Jewish people were afraid. So Tosfos says the reason why Hashem had to coerce them at the last minute was because even though they said Nasa V'Nishma were so excited, all of a sudden there was this great fire. These loud noises, the Jewish people became afraid, right? And the Jewish people were backing away. So that's why Hashem had to force them. So you remember the question on Tosfos? We've said this before. It's just, this is an idea that you have to review, and you have to review again, and you have to review again. Because all too often when we learn Torah, it just becomes like reading another book. Like, I understand there are books in English that we read in Torah, but you don't read a halacha book in English the way you read Harry Potter in English. I know we get a geschmack. I get a geschmack from Harry Potter. Other books also, you read in English, you get a geschmack from. But when you read an English Torah book, it's a different experience, right? And that's what Rabbi, one of the commentaries on Tosfos says. Wait, I got an obvious question on Tosfos' chat. If the Jews said Nasa V'Nishma, they're so excited, so why does Hashem have to give the fire in the first place to scare them off? Again, Rav Schwab gave us a pshat in the first pshat, right? What was the purpose of the sounds and the fires? Because Hashem was driving that peg deep into the soul and heart of the Jewish people. That what? That Matan Torah, the gift of Torah, the gift of being connected to God, of that yearning for God, meaning God created that yearning before He actually revealed Himself to us and spoke to us. But not working with it, Rav Schwab pshat, if again, Rav Schwab is a beautiful chiddush that there's Matan Torah and then there's God's revelation speaking to us, two different things. But if you're working that it was all one experience, so then Taka, why did he have to have the fire? Why did Hashem have to have the fire and all these loud noises to scare the Jewish people? So Rav Shmuel Birnbaum Zatzal, again, and you remember him, Susie, you must remember him. No, Rich, you remember him? You remember? So if you remember Rav Shmuel, this makes so much sense. This pshat, mamash, comes from his personality. Rav Shmuel says, what's Tosfos teaching us? That Torah without fire is nish Torah. It's not Torah. I mean, you don't learn Torah dispassionately. You don't learn Torah in a cold way. Torah has to be with a fire. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, when you read Torah book, you have to be reading, the Gemara in Erevin says, when you learn Torah, you have to say it out loud. You're reading a book in English. You say the words out loud. And you should say it ideally with excitement, even though you're not excited, you're tired. You're supposed to say it with excitement. You're supposed to generate that fire, that inner fire you have. Bring it out. Bring it out. You know, Shlomo Carlbach said, based on Kabbalistic sources, that there are two hells. Figure, coldest day of the year, this is a good idea to hear, right? Right? That there's a hell of fire and there's a hell of ice. Mamsh, the sources in Reishis Chachma, when one of the old Kabbalistic sources from Tzfat, the Reishis Chachma, there's two hells. There's a hell of fire and there's a hell of ice. What's the hell of fire? You go to that hell when you do Averis with a fire. When you sin with a passion. What's the hell of ice? That's where you go when you don't do your mitzvahs with that fire. When you don't do mitzvahs with the fire, okay, see, you don't do mitzvahs with the fire, what are the mitzvahs? You could go to hell. It's still, it's a cold hell, but it's still hell. I mean, it's not warm. It's still cold. What are mitzvahs that you do cold? That's what we spoke about at Shal Shudas, a little whole Torah from Elyalopian. We're not going to get into it all again. But you know, every person, Tu B'Shvat, another connection of human being and trees, not only the sap going up, but this is an idea we've said many times before of Eliel Pian, the great Baal Musar, the Rebbe of Rav Matzisyahu Salomon. So he said, what does it mean, Ki Adam Eitz Hasadah, that person's like a tree? He says, every human being has two sets of roots. We have roots going down, and we have roots going up. Why? Because every human being is a composite of what? Of afar min ha'adama, literally dirt from the ground, and a chelek elokam mimal, and a soul. A vayipach ba'ap of nishmas chaim. God blows into Adam's nostrils a speaking spirit. So we have roots going up, we have roots going down. Rav Eliel Pian says, the challenge of life is which roots do you feed? Do you feed the roots connecting you down or the roots connecting you up? And he says, what does it mean to feed the roots? He says, what strengthens roots? What makes the roots stronger and more robust and healthier and more anchored? He says, simcha, joy and passion. He says, a person that gets no passion out of their mitzvos, unfortunately, your roots to heaven can grow weaker. A person whose whole passion is connecting to the earth. So unfortunately, such a person becomes, you know, those roots up weaken. And if you remember a story I told a number of times, a beautiful story when Rav Moshe Weinberger, the Rav of the Shul Eish Kodesh in the Five Towns in Woodmere, one time was invited to come to a big Super Bowl party that a lot of his chevra had, you know, to speak at the halftime show. And so he went to give a shiur during the halftime, and everyone felt good about themselves. Okay, we're not watching the halftime show. The preacher stick a halftime show. But they were surprised when Rav Weinberger was hanging around. Do you remember this story? It's such an amazing story. And what happened was, evidently, it was one of the really exciting Super Bowls. It might have been the one Giants-Patriots, the first time that Mamish was like a crazy game. It's towards the end of the game, like 2.5 minutes, everyone's jumping around. Weinberger's sitting with the safer learning in the corner. Everyone's jumping around, then Weinberger walks to the big screen and turns it off. Pulls out the plug. And he just turns to everyone and goes, when's the last time your kids saw you this excited about anything to do with God and spirituality? And he put the plug back in, and then he left. Yeah, that ruined the Super Bowl for the rest of them, right? That really was a damper. But you know, that's what Rav Eliel Pian says, the question of Tu B'Shvat is, where are your roots? Where are your roots getting strength? What gets you excited? And look, it's not easy. Trust me. It's much easier to sit and get excited by images on a screen. And, you know, there's a lot of wisdom put into trying getting you excited about television shows and movies and Madison Avenue is a multi-billion-dollar industry to play on human deep-seated emotions and desires and to get you to want things. That spirituality is playing catch-up. There's no question. But that's the challenge of what it is to be a spiritual person in a world that's a world of falsehood, an alma de shikra. That's why the Hebrew word olam means what? Hiddenness. This world hides God. You have to work hard to try and perceive the Ribono Shel Olam. And Hashem should help us because you know, Chevra, Parshas Yisro is a very special week. We know that every Parsha brings its own spiritual energies. So we have an amazing, amazing double energy here. We have the energy of a Tu B'Shvat, of a new beginning, of the sap is rising up in our trunks. The sap, once again, we're feeling that vitality, we're feeling that energy. And also, it's a Kabbalah Satorah. It's an opportunity to feel the fire and to hear the earth-shaking sounds. And behind that, to feel that kol d'mam adak. And the bracha is that we should all feel the panimius haneshama, the dveikus halev, a yearning for God, and we should stay awake, right? Don't go to sleep. Stay awake and do your part in learning Torah and being mekabel Torah and connecting to Torah in a very deep way. Shkoyach for coming out in the cold. Really, shkoyach.